Heyo, welcome back to the Masonic Roundtable, a weekly program where Masons from around the world get together to talk about Masonic news and opinions in a friendly and social manner. As a reminder, the thoughts and opinions expressed here are solely the opinions of the participants and do not represent any Grand Lodge statements or positions. Make sure you keep your conversations open for the public and on the level. To interact with us, we love seeing you live in Facebook or YouTube land. The streams are always lit. The chats are great. Can't get to every chat, but do realize your chats may end up on the show. And if you can't catch us live, as always, catch us in the replay or in your favorite podcasting app. You know me, my name and lower third says John Ruark, past master of the Patriot Lodge, number 1957 in Fairfax, Virginia. Next up, Jason Richards. Good evening, Jason.
Good evening, John. Hey, everybody. Jason Richards here, past master of Acacia Lodge number 16 in Clifton, Virginia, and member of a lodge in D.C. and Ohio as well. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you. And next up, Robert Johnson. What? Hey, what? What's going on over there?
When we say mouth to ear, that is not at all what we mean. Yes.
I thought it was.
I mean, maybe in Texas, but
not in. Hey, Robert Johnson here, past master, Waukegan 78, current sitting secretary over there, as well as the worshipful master at Space Nova Lodge, number 1183, the premier Masonic Lodge, maybe in the world.
Of Libertyville.
And then I got this road warrior over here.
James A. Buckhorn, Pentalpha Lodge, number 564 in Indianapolis, Indiana. I guess I am a past master too, so I'll mention that.
You like sunsets and long walks on the beach.
I like long walks off of short pier.
You could take a short walk off of a long pier as long as you're going off. Also,
or from.
I'm not trying to be creepy or nothing, but
would I be off?
I'd totally fall asleep listening to that voice, probably. Bucky.
He does have a soothing voice, yeah.
Yeah, it's got the NPR radio voice.
Yeah. I'd like to thank my mentor, Chuck Dunning, for the recordings he sends me that I emulate.
I like it. No, all right. Let's pay the bills and thank all the patrons who support the show. You guys are awesome, as always. And happy St. Patrick's Day to all the patrons who support the show.
A couple days early.
Yeah, you know, getting ahead of the game. Should have worn my O'Rourke shirt. But anyway, if you want to be a supporter of the show, head over to patreon.com/the Masonic Roundtable.
Yeah, be early, right? We're pre-gaming already.
Looks like, yep. It really does.
Yeah, yeah. You got James over here
concealing,
drinking some Dr.
Brother Pepper.
Brother Peppers.
Okay, Brother Peppers.
Lonely Hearts. Brother Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band.
Lonely Farts Club Lodge.
This was a great show we used to have.
It really was.
It was.
And you know what's next, right?
Tarot card of the week.
Yes.
Forgot to cue you in, James. You missed it.
All right. So this week on Tarot Card of the Week, we have the Arcanus Animal Tarot.
Animal Tarot.
Yes. Release your inner animal. And doing a little bit of shuffling here. And we have... not a great card in general, but tonight we've got the Eight of Swords.
Oh, nice. That's classy.
Yeah.
I like it. Too many ideas. Confusion.
Trapped with you in your own over analysis. Analysis paralysis, as it were.
Yeah.
Say Yeah, it's a prison of your own design.
Mm-hmm. And you're blindfolded, so you're ignoring necessarily the external things that you need to care about as well.
Yes, but at the same time, like, the swords aren't actually cutting you
yet.
And you could get out of it if you could just get out of your own way.
Just suck it up, Buttercup. That's what I tell my kids.
Yeah. Break through the toilet paper.
Rub some dirt in it.
Get some grit.
Walk it off.
Walk it off. So yeah, swords typically emblematical of intellect and intelligence, and most of the downer cards in the tarot, I think, are in the swords, between the 3, the 8, and the 10.
Gonna have a bad time.
Yeah. And then it's those, and then like the tower. Those are the
cards. I love the tower. That's one of my favorite cards. No. Pizza when you should have French fried.
Love it. All right, what are we talking about tonight? We are talking about finding the right fit.
Hold on a second. Are you saying that if somebody interested in Freemasonry goes to their Grand Lodge website and the Grand Lodge just like throws them to the closest lodge that they're right there next to? That's not necessarily...
I thought geographic location was the answer.
I thought the geographic location was the perfect lodge.
It is a factor, right? If you know, are you going to travel, you know, 2 hours to your lodge for a meeting?
Maybe, maybe not.
Maybe not. Mm-hmm. But when you have multiple options, especially in urban areas like Northern Virginia, places in Texas, California, major capital cities, generally speaking, you will have multiple lodges that you can choose from.
And don't rule out areas that may not be as populated. However, there may be multiple lodges that share one common building, because it doesn't make economic sense, right, to have multiple buildings. And so you might have one lodge that meets on a Monday in the same building that another one meets on a Wednesday. So how do you pick? If they're literally exactly the same distance away, which one do you pick? So what's the impetus for this topic tonight, Jason?
Oh, man. We're going to call out a buddy of mine. So I had a buddy I used to work with who hit me up a couple weeks ago and said, hey, man, like, really looking for, you know, some camaraderie, and like, I just keep coming back to Freemasonry, and Freemasonry as an institution and organization is really interesting. But I have like no idea how to go about doing this. And so I've been coaching him through the process down in Texas. And have been getting some great help from, good folks like, Brad Billings and Billy Hamilton helping me get in touch with the right guys and the right folks down there. But I realized, for those non-Masons who watch our show, could be a very daunting thing to figure out just where to start and how to pick that right lodge. You know, arguably, had I understood myself how to go about becoming a Freemason, I probably would have been initiated earlier, because I just didn't know how about doing it and who that. Yeah.
That is true.
And it's interesting, because I often think about where I was when I decided to join. And it's not like I knew that I had a choice. I thought all lodges would be the same, no matter what. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that there was as much liberty as the lodges had in terms of their general practices. And so, you know, while I had a really positive experience at my mother lodge, I know there are...
Not everybody gets that.
And, you know, I honestly... I honestly believe there are many more Masons today that have voiced an opinion and found a better lodge since the advent of Masons talking about these things on the internet that it is okay to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the thing, right? You know, back in ye golden years, you would just, you know, join your father's lodge, or, you know, you would find out, you know, after your grandparents passed that they were Masons, and then you would go join their lodge. Because the older generations, by and large, didn't really talk about their Masonic membership. And I know I'm generalizing.
Yeah.
But
it was tradition.
Yes.
Like the old, you got to ask three times before they hand you a petition.
Yeah. What'd you do, James?
When I joined?
Yeah. Did you join the right lodge the first time?
Oh, you bet your sweet butt that I didn't. Although, you know, is it really the wrong lodge at the time if you are still a Mason today and you're active in a different lodge? Or is it just part of your journey? I think about this sometimes because, you know, I had some interesting experiences at my first lodge. It was, let's say, a lodge in friction in some of the recent years. And it's doing very well now. And I wish nothing for the best, but the best for those brothers. But at the time, you know, they say when we're craving water or potato chips or whatever it is, it's because our bodies identified a deficiency in that.
They need that at that time.
Right. So if you're craving salt, then eating something that doesn't have any salt in it isn't going to satisfy what you need nutritionally. And I think it's the same. Sometimes we end up at a lodge where we're seeking, and it might be wonderful, gourmet, but it's not what we're looking for right then. It's not what we need right then.
Right.
I think, especially for a lot of us who join Masonry because there's something we're missing in our lives. Mm-hmm. It's difficult, right? How many Masons, what's the percentage of us that have shopped lodges before being initiated?
Yeah, is it probably pretty low?
Is it more than one in 100,000? I would be surprised.
Well, see, that's the thing, right? So, again, hindsight being 2020, like, we realize that there is a better opportunity, which is why we're doing this show this way. And so another metaphor, I like the metaphor you have about, you know, satisfying a deficiency that you're trying to enter into. Another metaphor that came to mind too is kind of like dating, right? Once you you really need to find the style, the culture, the thing that connects with you. And it's not a lifelong commitment necessarily. You know, we think it's like one and done, once a Mason, always a Mason. And yet you can change lodges later, right? So, sure. You know,
best to get through all the degrees first.
Best to get, to pass all three bases first. And then, but I think that's another little metaphor, because there's like the shopping around part in the beginning of just kind of exploring what's there. And then there's the post relationship, like, do I want to change to something else after that? So it's really, really two phases of things that we're talking about tonight. So to keep it kind of simple, let's just do one at a time. And I'd probably say, if you're listening and you're not quite yet handed a petition to someone yet, what's something that they should do as they are shopping around for lodges now that they know they can do that? What should they look for?
Well, first, they need to go to the website of the Grand Lodge over their jurisdiction.
Why is that, Jason?
Why is that? Because there are a lot of Grand Lodges that purport to be Grand Lodges. And Freemasonry, I tell candidates, Freemasonry is like the United Nations. It's all about recognition. And so to have an optimal Masonic experience where you can travel freely and, you know, visit other lodges. If that's something that's interesting to you, then you will want to join, I hate this term, mainstream Grand Lodge or mainstream Prince Hall Grand Lodge, if you're in the United States, of your state or jurisdiction.
And Abair is mentioning that this is the case because it's like, you'd want to be a part of the insurance that accepts the most providers, right?
Yeah.
So like, it makes sense because this is the system that has the most recognized lodges and who have agreed on acceptable in terms of what is masonry. Mm-hmm. I'll put that in quotes, right? Because it changes a little bit, but yeah.
And let's just boil it down. Like, if you wanted to travel to visit other lodges, you want one that is recognized by more jurisdictions. I love to travel to other lodges outside of my state when I travel for work, that kind of thing. And so, the spoiler alert, like if the Grand Lodge you're looking up ends in LLC or like has a key underneath of the square and compass, stay away from those. That, good for them, but those are the ones that have the limited amount of travel that you can do.
As in that one lodge.
Yes, that one lodge with the same three guys that will initiate you through hazing.
And for every person that pays dues, you get a cut.
It's like a pyramid scheme.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Masonry is a pyramid scheme. It's just a little more sophisticated of one than that.
Fair enough. All right, so we've gone to a Grand Lodge that's well-known, well-recognized, has the authority over the jurisdiction in that state. What next?
You go to that Grand Lodge website, and most all Grand Lodges, at least in the United States, have a lodge locator right on their website that will give you the location, name, address, and phone number and email address of some of the officers of all of the lodges, in their jurisdiction that are close to you. And so you can very easily, sharpen your pencil and get your list down from 300 something lodges in the Commonwealth of Virginia in our jurisdiction, down to 3 or 4 or 5 that are kind of, within, in our case, drivable. 15 to 30 minutes away.
Mm-hmm.
But then what do you do?
What do you do, James?
Well, I think we'd be remiss if we didn't mention that a lot of Grand Lodges have worked hard to integrate their system with the Be a Freemason website. And there's actually an existing team in place in many Grand Lodges. And I used to do this for the Grand Lodge of Indiana. But we reach out, we make contact with the individual. We get to know them a little bit and we try to work with them. Well, you live in City A, but you work in City B. And your grandpa's was a Mason back in the day in City C, allegedly. Well, what nights are you free? What are you wanting? How can we make this work for you, right?
Yeah, there's something that the Grand Lodge of Oklahoma did as well, I believe under Most Worshipful Brother Bob Davis. They had a survey on their website that basically gave them a roundabout kind of bird's eye view of what you as a person were looking for in masonry. Philosophy, history, charity, all those things. And what was interesting was when they would make the call to that individual, they would point them to the lodges they felt matched those people's, personalities.
I love that.
Which I thought, hey, that's really cool. I mean, it's one way to sort of, like, you could agree, I mean, you could make the case that it's creating tribes or whatever, but, ultimately,
or
Yeah.
Or perhaps it's laying a firm foundation.
Yeah.
That will pay dividends later on through the increase of member retention.
What? Yeah. No way.
That's pretty spot on.
How do we... It's just really interesting to me to think about this, because how much of member retention could be solved by exactly what we're talking about tonight?
Well, it's, again, back to the metaphor of dating, right? You kind of have to know what you're interested in. You know, you can't just, I mean, you could just start swiping right on everything and see what happens, or you could actually do a little bit of internal. What am I actually searching for? You may not know everything.
A man who has never used Tinder.
Yes, that is true. Grindr all the way. So what we have is, you may not know what you're looking for. I know I didn't exactly. I was drawn to the mystery of Freemasonry. I just knew that a lot of the coworkers and people in my life that were Masons, that wore their rings, they were not horrible people. And so that gave me enough to actually start knocking at the door and start talking to them. Super amazed what I found when I was inside, but if you watch TMR for the past decade, you'd know that there are some really cool things on the inside. And hopefully, you know, you find what attracts to your interests, your values, your principles, etc.
Well, and I know for me, like, I was kind of juggling back and forth between two lodges, and you know, God bless my mentor, David Hill, because he was like, no, you're going to Acacia. I was like, oh, okay, sure. At the time where I was living, you know, I had another lodge 2 minutes down the road.
Is this David Hill who we went on a tour with?
Yes.
The very same.
What a guy. Super cool. Love it.
Yeah. Yeah, he was also on the podcast for our Freemasonry in Australia episode back when he was in Canberra.
Oh, yeah.
That was a while back.
It's a deep cut for TMR. But what I found out after I was raised was, you know, Acacia had a very, very different atmosphere and feel that matched my needs and my personality around Masonry better than this other lodge. And so in a way, I was very lucky to have that guiding hand of my mentor saying, no, like, you're looking for these things. This lodge is going to be the right fit for you.
Now, finding the right fit is interesting too, because my mother lodge that I joined, it was geographically the closest one. However, you know, I went to dinner beforehand and met some of the brothers there. It was kind of cool because, and I appreciated it more after going through, was the diversity of Herndon Lodge, which was cool because we had gentlemen of all ages, of all nationalities, of many different religions. And we were all literally like the brotherhood of men under the fatherhood of God. So that was, again, I was extremely lucky to have that experience and get different perspectives along the way on my journey. And so I'm thankful for that. And if I had gone in with the pre-assumption that I wanted to find a lodge that had just a bunch of people who look and think and act like me and go to the same church that I go to, you know, I would have limited my Masonic experience, right? And so you definitely should shop around and get a feel for the culture of that lodge. We use that word in the past of find out what that lodge culture is, because every lodge is different. Like Robert said, there's a lot of liberty in what the lodges can do, and think about how that aligns to your interest, to where you want to go. What are the next steps for you? The only thing I'll add to that is, lost my train of thought, cause I'm going to let Robert interrupt. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, as you were talking about this idea, I'm like, well, okay, so Masonry is kind of like the loosest franchise ever. Huh. But then I thought, well, maybe that's not a great example. And I said, well, what's a franchise that has like super just ridiculous autonomy that it gives to its franchisees. And I'm like, oh yeah, I remember Bob's Big Boy, right? Oh. Every Bob's Big Boy had their own recipe for a sauce or some or something, you know. It's like Masonry's kind of like that. Yeah. So I mean, it's like that you'll read short talk bulletins or whatever. You'll find these articles that say, you know, I visited another country and Lodge was in a different language, but it was no mistaking where I was. Mm-hmm. So, and, you know, it's, they're all the same in that respect, but you know, that like in the UK, they have so many different affinity type lodges.
Right. What's an affinity lodge, Robert?
So just imagine a lodge where all of the members are somehow involved in race car driving, whether they're guys who do tune-ups, they drive, they manufacture parts or whatever the case is. Look at this guy there. But that's kind of an affinity lodge. You know, we have an affinity lodge right here every single Thursday. Look at Brother Martinez. Probably, are you sitting in Carl's chair?
I am sitting in Carl's. You are astute as ever, sir. Yes. Wow. We had, speaking of finding the right fit, don't know where we are in the conversation, but yeah, I was at Manassa Lodge tonight for York Rite Night. So we did, some little commandery, little Royal Arch, little camaraderie, little fellowship.
Nice. So, like, no, had you not shown up 30 minutes late, you would have known right where we were in the conversation.
Well, I will be quiet and play catch up. And
right where we were.
Right.
So.
The right fit is 9:30 p.m. Eastern.
So what I was going to say was, you know, I teach like leadership and culture and strategy and all that as part of my vocation. And my favorite definition of culture is the set of repeated behaviors of an organization. Mm. So not good or bad. It's just what the people in that organization do repeatedly. And so when I say shop around for lodge culture, using that definition, I would say, go look at their calendar, right? Go see, are they doing lots of social events? Are they doing lots of pancake breakfast? Even crab roasts in Joe's area. Do they have
a website? Do they have social media presence?
Yes, that is a good one.
I can't tell you how many times when I was a DDGM, we'd get these like inquiries, and some dude would hit me up and be like, I looked at all these lodges, but this lodge has a website that hasn't been updated in 5 years. I know they're the closest to me, but I can't bring myself to join that lodge because of that one thing. I'm like, well, you wouldn't be wrong.
it's an indicator, right?
Yeah.
Right. Not updating the website is a repeated behavior. Joe?
Well, I mean, and if you guys touched on this already, I sincerely apologize, but it's just been a night. But I mean, I think a lot of you have been to our lodge here, and we have prospects showing up all the time because we have a very heavy social media presence, and our website wasn't made in 1994. So, and you can find current information, and we have a lot of family things here and stuff like that. So, I mean, the one thing we do when a prospect walks in the door, and if you covered this, just shut me up, is we send them back in after 10 minutes. You know, like, you know, he meets the guys, has a cup of coffee, we talk about stuff. And, you know, before they even get to that, hey, I'd like a petition phase, we say, go visit other lodges. 3 miles down the road, there's this lodge over here. 5 miles over there, there's this lodge. They may not be the closest lodge, but go check them out. It might be more your speed. It might have people you click with more. And 9 times out of 10, they come back here. Crab roasts, Brother Gary. Love you, man. But, you know, we always make it a point to tell people, don't drop a petition at the very first lodge you walk into because it may not be the right fit.
Good call. Good call.
Do you think that there's a case where a lodge or district area administrator might have a problem with that approach?
It is not a documented approach. We as a group of brothers, and Jason was a good part of that for a bit, we decided that that was the right thing to do because you had people that, again, you'd meet them. They'd be wonderful people, you know, great stories to tell. They're interested in Freemasonry, but they didn't just gel with the brothers that are sitting around the table. And if they don't, you know, what's the value add in having their sit through the degrees and then get bored and disinterested because they're not clicking with the right people and never coming back? You know, if you're interested in, if you don't want the weird, freaky stuff that Brother Joe likes, go down to this lodge. It's super boring. They read the minutes every night. They're out by 8:30. You know, it might be more your speed. Or conversely, you have another lodge in the other direction that, you know, the guys get together for a great meal. They're really light on business. They're light on education too. But, you know, they again, they get stuff done early and they're close knit group of people from a familiar perspective. So it's, you know, it's different vibes for everybody. But to your point, we had, my first year as district deputy, and I'm not going to name names. My first year as a master, the district deputy of the time, he would ask us why we would do that. He's like, why are you sending people out the door to another lodge? It's like, because you should never put a petition at the first lodge you walk into. You know, and he was kind of dumbfounded by that.
Well, and I remember Joe back at Acacia when I think I was master at the time. There was a brother who was looking to get involved, and you know, he ultimately said, you know what, I think I'm going to go over to Manassa, and then he's the reason why you sat in the East for 2 years. So,
thanks, buddy.
Nice. It's
go ahead, James.
You know, I'm finishing up this marketing degree, and it's interesting to see the history of marketing in the last 100 years in, you know, Western cultures and markets. It's gone from companies expecting people to purchase the amount of product they need to today, and, you know, for many decades now, companies trying to figure out what people actually need so that they can produce it. And I think there's a great analogy here with Masonry. It really frustrates me that it's not obvious to most lodges that this should be a two-way interview. And that's exactly what we're talking about, right?
Ooh, I like that.
You know, multiple lodges are going to court you. But don't be a cheap date, you know, go talk to other lodges, figure out what's the best fit for you. Don't make your decision right away. So if you know, the question is, hey, I'm thinking about becoming a Mason and I'm watching TMR tonight. Don't get seduced easily. Go around. Don't let it off put you too much if people try to hard sell you on Masonry. Unfortunately, that just kind of is the standard more than it isn't. In my experience, it's what those guys know. It doesn't mean they're bad guys. And it actually doesn't mean that it's not going to be a great fit for you, but go visit a few lodges. You know, there are a lot of Masons today, I think, that are Masons in spite of the experience they had joining. I know I'm one of them, right? And Joe, yeah, three of us, maybe more. There's something to be said for that. You know, sometimes we as a candidate want it more than maybe the lodge wants it for us at that period in time, because they're kind of, I'm not trying to say a degree mill. That's not exactly what I'm trying to say. There are lodges that are going through the motions, and it doesn't necessarily click for them that Masonry is a society with deeper meaning and that we have ritual, because we aren't the Lions Club. We aren't the Rotary. There's something different about Masonry. And some guys have been Masons for 50 years and they don't get it. And there are guys that have been Masons for 5 years and they embody it wholeheartedly.
Well, I mean, you said something really interesting there, James, where, you know, talking about it from a marketing perspective. And I think that, well, number one, we are probably the worst marketed organization on the planet, number one.
Pretty close.
We really are. We don't market well, even though we don't solicit, we don't market our brand well at all. Right. Everybody associates us with, you know, crab roasts and, you know, oyster bakes and, you know, whatever other fishy thing you like. But I think you said something super interesting, is that I don't think most candidates or prospects actually come to us from a consumer perspective. Like, what am I shopping for? What am I looking for? You know, they just get the, well, I got tired of nobody asking me, so I'm just going to drive up to the closest one near my house. So they're not really shoppers, right? So they're not consumers from that marketing perspective. They're just basically, you know, whatever door you hit is the one you're going to walk into. So
I was in a group chat with, I think, all of you a month or two ago, and I said, hey, I feel silly saying this because I feel like it just makes so much sense that it's embarrassing that I'd have to even say it aloud because everyone must understand this inherently. And I go into this long, detailed kind of write-up and talk about an article I'd written for a Masonic magazine that I just submitted it. And I think I got a thumbs up emoji, and then John linked me to a TMR episode from 10 years ago. But it was about the consumer journey, right? The user journey.
Yes.
From a Masonic perspective. And, I'd be interesting in getting our thoughts maybe from the other side, a how-to guide for the consumer in that experience. What should you do, right?
I really design that.
Mm-hmm. I'd love that, but it... Oh God, where was I going with this?
Well, and I think, looking at it from the consumer perspective, James, I feel bad for those folks who are trying to get into Freemasonry today, just because, how do any of us, look for something that we don't know much about? We go to the internet, right? And there's so much information of widely varying degrees of quality about Freemasonry. And so it would appear to me that it'd just be overwhelming to a prospective consumer for Freemasonry, just trying to figure out, well, what's the right Grand Lodge? What is this recognition? What's this Freemasonry watch, thing, just.
And this is the trouble of an inefficient marketing funnel, right?
Right. Exactly.
It's narrower and narrower. And hey, in many ways, it's a benefit, right? It's a control, but in many ways, it's not, right? Because a lot of the times, organizations and Masonry, I would say especially, has relied on volume throughput to find, the diamonds, the quality conversions that make it through, right? Successful conversions. But there's a problem, right, when we focus on quantity and not quality. So where's the balance? I said a lot of us are Masons today in spite of the experience.
Better investigating committees. People in the right place. And somebody said up there, they said word of mouth marketing though. And I think maybe there's something to that, but we got to figure out what that means in 2024.
I would
figure out what it means in 2010.
Well, I think Jason wanted to say something, but I want to argue with James for a second. After Jason goes.
I was just going to say, I think Grand Lodges largely are trying to push the word of mouth marketing, but I just think a lot of our, supper Masons who have been in for 40 years, they just don't have that broader network to get the word out to the right people in the right way.
And who's attending things socially like that? Like, I don't know a whole lot of people doing community social things outside of organizations that already include those types of people, like church or lodge or synagogue or temple or whatever, argue with James.
Well, no, I think James made really, really great points. I think the problem is that, because you were talking about, we were very volume based looking for those diamonds in the rough. I mean, and I'm going to have to say for, 40 or 50 years post the Great Wars, I don't think we were looking for diamonds in the rough. We were just looking for bodies and seats to build wonderful temples with wonderful architecture and very grandiose things. And we needed that money to funnel that. So I don't think anybody cared about a diamond in the rough for that time. And we're kind of living in a result of that excessive culture that Freemasonry grew around, to where we're struggling and all we care about is numbers, because we have to keep the lights on and we have to keep the buildings up and, that kind of thing. So,
and that's how Freemasonry has turned itself into a pyramid scheme. Going back to,
we're almost passing the buck. Joe, I do agree with you. And I only meant that we survive by getting diamonds out of the rough of the volume, you know, kind of an accuracy by volume situation, if you will.
Right.
Yeah. It's really a game of efficiency, right? And that's why the two-way interview process, I think, is so vital if we're going to survive as a fraternity, right? You got 100 pieces of bread of different sizes, and they've got 100 pieces that match up with them. But are you a sloppy PB&J assembler that's just going to slap any two pieces together, right? There's an efficiency, right? RJ's going to go to this lodge down the street, and hey, he'll probably have a decent experience, and we're happy for him. But there's a lodge that would be an incredible fit for him if I talk to him and get to know him, right? You walk into a lodge and you get a petition shoved into your hand, or a petition accepted from your own hand because you printed it off on the internet yourself, right? And the response maybe should be, oh, hey, well, that's cool that you did that. I just want to get to know you, so... You know,
just go ahead and put that back in your pocket, because I'm not going to sign that tonight.
Right. And
how can I get you into this car?
we know our areas best, right? We know our cultures best, and we know kind of how we can curtail that message, or tailor it rather, to our areas.
Right.
I think there should be a guy or a team at every lodge, official or unofficial, where someone walks in and everyone's on the same page, right? All members of the lodge that have been active in the last 5 years are on the same page. Hey, if a guy shows up with a petition in hand, or he says he's not a Mason and he's checking it out, we want you to say these three things, right? Or not say these three things. It's not a marketing pitch. Our job is to be friendly, welcome him, capture his contact information, and start
using answer questions.
Right, just build a bond. It's about building a bond.
Build and inviting
him back to, you know, our job is to get you back without a petition in your hand a significant amount of times, whatever significant means to your culture and area. And hey, you know, I'd rather lose three guys in a year and get the one guy that's going to become a 15-year yes. active Mason.
100%.
And have three guys that drop out, right? I had friends who worked for one of the Scottish Rite offices, and they said, hey, we did a survey, and we looked at the numbers, and the analytics show a pretty steep drop-off of a Scottish Rite membership after 5 years. And I said, oh, that's interesting. I happen to be coming up on my five-year date for that body, and a few months later I got a thank you certificate, thanks for being a member for 5 years. But it was almost like a membership patent,
like
interesting. This made me feel welcome and wanted. But what are we doing in masonry at the craft lodge level for guys that are just going to drop off, right? They're right. going to drop off after 2 or 3 years because they were so excited, and their level of their piece of bread was bigger than the lodge they were at, right?
Well, and that's a great point, right? Because that's the segue I wanted to get to, too, is, okay, you get in, you start going through the degrees, and maybe this dating thing's not working out, but you're already kind of committed. You're in
the rings.
You bought the ring.
As it were.
Right.
I'm so glad that Robert's wearing pants.
I personally have talked to people that either got halfway through. Oh, that's nice. They got halfway through the process, through the degrees, and realized this is not a good fit. That these guys are talking about me behind my back, even because they weren't there when it actually balloted on me, or whatever. There was just some tension there that wasn't there at face value before. And so the advice I gave them was, okay, you've made it this far, like, it was a big enough hurdle, and the time you've invested, just get through the degrees, right? Just get your third degree, right? Don't stir the pot, right? Don't make a big deal. But immediately after getting your third degree, it's time to start shopping around again.
Well, and why we say that is mm-hmm. because of the bureaucratic processes
yes.
involved with is trying to switch a lodge before you become a Master Mason. It is...
That could be a whole show in itself. Yeah.
It is infinitely more complex, and you have such a lower chance of success by trying to switch you know, you even trying to switch your petition after you've put in a petition, but before you've taken any of the degrees, right? That lodge, you know, then kind of owns you as the consumer and the candidate up until such a time as you are a Master Mason and a full-fledged member of the organization.
I wanted to kind of go back to something John said, or at least something that sparked in my mind, but on the other side, we do have controls, I think, built into Masonry, right? You know, there's websites where stuff's right on the front page, and then there's also websites where certain things take a certain amount of click through to get to, and it's done intentionally, right? And so maybe we don't want the kind of guy who's gonna come, and more than anything, he found out about Freemasonry from common knowledge, and he's decided instantly he's going to put in a petition, and that's not necessarily the worst thing on its own, but maybe he shows up and it's just not the right time in his life because he's looking to sign a check and hand it over, right? And then on the other side of that spectrum, we have guys who show up, specifically I've noticed this in millennials more than any other group so far, but that might change in the next few years as the next generation comes up. Guys that are showing up wanting more, they're wanting the deeper meaning than was being given to candidates when we were, you know, funneling them through at a high volume. And when they don't get it, when it's easy, and when we've told them in specific circumstances, oh, don't worry, normally there's work to do between degrees, but we're doing you a favor by waiving it. Guys like me would have been like, I don't think I feel great about that. You know, I want to do what everyone else did, or my perception of what everyone else did. And then again, we're 5 years down the line and there's nothing engaging us anymore.
Do you buy?
It felt cheap and easy, right?
It's like, it's kind of like, you think there's this brother who once gave this great presentation at our lodge, and I think he's since really moved on, but his presentation was essentially looking at Masonry like a video game, right? And he's he kept saying stuff like, yeah, I mean, I could like do whatever, but to gain this level, but by incrementally doing the tasks and gaining the HP.
Side quest, baby.
You're side questing to level up, right? And so like by doing all that stuff, not only are you learning about the fundamentals in the system, you're gaining an experience, you are gaining a knowledge base that allows you to do what we ask of you in the ritual, which is to kindly, you know, inform your lesser well-known brethren or whatever. Like, it just offers you so much more. Like, I would much rather go through from top to bottom list, right? It's just like math. Nobody just says, here's your degree in mathematics. We're doing you a favor by not letting you have to learn it all.
You got a calculator, don't worry about it.
Yeah. What? You got to start. You got to build on processes until you understand the entire concept.
This is the thing that has always fascinated me and blown my mind about the Swedish Rite, is that in certain versions, it's essentially a 20-year system to get through it. And if you don't attend and you don't put in work, you don't advance. And that's mind-blowing to me. I found out about this a certain group maybe 3 or 4 years ago, and I checked out their website, and it's amazing now how low my bar was set, because they said you have to write a petition, you have to write a paper to submit a petition and be voted in, and you have to write a paper between each of the grades or degrees. At the time, I thought it was revolutionary. This is what I think we should have been doing for candidates all along. Like, I had this idea, no one thought it was good. This is awesome.
Well, nobody thought it was good because you can't get per capita and dues that way.
Well, I wasn't at the right lodge. I wasn't at the right fit for me in the style of Masonry that my heart wanted to believe existed, but that my eyes couldn't see, you know?
Well, so, I mean, to your point, James, I mean, we're jaded as continental Freemasons, right? Like, we're very accustomed to the American way that Masonry is done. And for many Masons,
Freemasonry,
that's all they know, right? Is this continental form of Freemasonry. But you said a couple of things which are really poignant. I mean, the first one is you've got many systems in Europe and in other countries that you are a member when you're initiated, right? Like lodges open on the apprentice degree, business gets done, things happen at the end of the apprentice degree, and you end up working towards those other degrees, right? To become a master mason or whatever they call it. And then you touched on something with the Swedish rite. There are other rites in Freemasonry that we're not accustomed to seeing here in the United States, where everything revolves around that very first step, right? And then people will spend decades and decades and decades just waiting for more. It's like, what's next? I know I'm working towards it, but it's, they're putting sweat equity into it, and it's much more valuable over time, you know? But again, we are consumed as a country of Freemasons by, got to get those numbers up, you know, got to pump those numbers and get that dues flowing, you know?
If the water is leaking out of the cup faster than you can pour it in,
pour more water in.
Yeah.
Yeah. In one day.
I'm the Grand Lodge of Ohio.
I'll have a one day cup pour.
I have no comment.
I'm a member in Ohio.
All right. So, about that. So again, you're in, you find it's not a fit for you. The good news is you can easily in most places, transfer membership. Right. So yes, yeah. Look at this. What's it? Cromade's piece says the Loveless episode had a very complicated road, explored three different lodges, raised in the third one and very active. And after 2 years became a plural member at the first lodge. Awesome. So there's lots of things you could do after you're in to be multiple members of different lodges. You can just change lodges, you know, change membership. Within your jurisdiction or without your jurisdiction.
Yeah.
So you have options. It's not a one and done and you're stuck and you don't like these guys and, you know, too bad, suck it up. No, you actually do have options. And I think most people don't know about that and then would rather NPD, right? And just like, oh, I'm just not going to stop going. Rather than know that they actually have the option to leave and to change things up a bit.
Well, it's like, what? I'm a member of three jurisdictions. Joe's a member of like seven. John, you're a member of two.
Two.
Mm-hmm. But yeah. You know what? To James's point, I pay for masonry that brings me value. Yeah. So.
Can we do a call to action
with a door key, Joe?
CTA? You got a CTA, James?
Yeah. You know, we were talking about the consumer side of the user journey, and I asked RJ, and he said it was okay. Can we see in the chat, you know, maybe you guys can brainstorm for us and share your experiences on what that might look like? What might the seeker of masonry, the person interviewing lodges for their fit, what would you look for? What do you wish you had looked for? Maybe some you guys can chip in.
Yeah, either are you currently browsing around for, or if you are already a mason, what did you wish you had browsed around for?
That sounds like an excellent follow-up episode that I'd be happy to bring James back on for.
Sure. I was going to do the ESPN or a Sports Center little tune, but I'll say yes instead. Da-na-na,
nice. Well, hey, look at that. We're at time. So let's get down to final thoughts, starting with our special guest, Brother Buckhorn.
How do final thoughts work on this? I actually don't know.
You have a thought that you saved for the end.
Oh, just a stream of consciousness.
Yeah, we'll do stream of consciousness this time. I don't have any special theme-related question for tonight.
Don't be stressed out too much about the future of masonry, because we need to realize that the only thing that you can change is what's in your purview. And I've spent a lot of time in masonry being stressed that I wasn't ready to be a mentor or pass on knowledge and be that Obi-Wan Kenobi figure for the next guy that I wish I had. But you only need to be working on one guy at a time, changing one man at a time and making his experience the best you can. And it doesn't need to be better than you can provide. It just needs to be your best. So can you tell him an Eagle Scout, do your best?
As long as you tried. Robert?
I think definitely the best thing you can do is go to a couple different lodge functions. I only ever went to a luncheon where there were a bunch of dudes from a bunch of different lodges, and I ended up petitioning the lodge that was closest to my house, and it tended to work out. And it worked out for me, and I'll say that it worked out in retrospect, because had you asked me 2 or 3 years into my Mother Lodge experience, I don't know that I would have said it was the greatest experience. We often look back and we say, oh, the good old days, and fail to remember that we're living the good old days. These will become. And so at the moment, at the time, it probably wasn't my favorite thing in the world. But I think today I look back and I think of it with fondness, which is why after I had demitted from my Mother Lodge, I went back after 4 years and I'm the secretary there again, and I wouldn't change it. I love those guys. There's just, it's different things for the way different people, work and have different types of psychological appetites, I guess. So do yourself a favor, check it out. If you have a friend in masonry, go to their lodge, check it out. If your friend in masonry says, ooh, I really would love you to be a Mason, but not my lodge. Well, we all know what that means. So
take their advice.
Yeah, take their advice, dude.
Run.
And I will say this too. If you get advice from Masons on how to prepare for your investigation, take that advice. Don't deviate. That's all.
Good to know. Awesome. Jason.
So I want to foot stomp Robert's first point, which is you need to actually go, and you need to attend several lodge functions at several different lodges. That is the way you will truly get a feel for day in and day out how these brothers operate. And, that's really the only way that you're going to get a feel for those lodges. And, it's one of the reasons why, a lot of lodges, at least in my jurisdictions, require the candidate to, get to know the brothers a little bit before they sign this petition. It's a very soft requirement. But the idea is that you as a prospect shouldn't be going into this relationship blind. You need to do your research and homework. The lodge needs to do its research and homework. It's very much like finding a mentoring relationship, right?
You
match up. Oh, go ahead, John.
Or a date.
Yeah. You match up, your needs and desirements with the lodge's ability to provide those, and hopefully there's a match, at least one or more. And you know what? If your needs and desirements change, cool. Or, if what you thought you wanted out of masonry ends up not being it, okay, that's cool. You can always shop around later too. Just because you get your degrees at one lodge, it doesn't mean you have to stay a member, or it doesn't mean that you can't join other lodges too.
Right. Good call.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll build on that. So thank you, Jason. And the one piece of advice I wish someone had given me is that I'm giving you permission to ask around, to start probing, to start looking beyond, right? You from where you are today, whether you are outside of masonry or if you're in masonry, it's okay to start shopping around, because if something's not a good fit, like, you want what's best for you. This, you're in this fraternity for you, to make you a better person. And if you're not getting that, you have permission to actually start shopping around and start finding a better fit for you. So, whether that's, you know, you join some like an academic lodge and you wanted a more social fraternal one, or vice versa, like, it's okay to change your mind. And as Jason alluded to, people change over the years. Like, you know, I've been a Mason for 17 years or so plus. So I'm not the same man I was 17 years ago. And so my tastes have changed. My attitude has changed. I have moved lodge membership around to reflect that. Joe is just like the Pokemon master and just collects them all. Right. And not, doesn't demit from anything, because, you know, if you just get them all, it's like this big Katamari Damacy ball and you just kind of roll it.
Gotta catch them all.
So yes, yeah, I give you permission to shop around at any point in your journey to make you the best man that you can be. And with that, I want to thank you all very much for watching. See you next week, and keep searching for more light. Have a good night.
Wow.
Pew, 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 pew. Wow.